We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. I could open the show talking about last night's game. I'm not going to. I'm going to talk about looking in between the lines or reading between the lines. The Royals were shut out once again. It's the eighth time this season they've been shut out. They lost to the Blue Jays 7-0. Brad Keller now falls to 1-7 on the year, a 4.19 ERA. They gave up 2 in the second, 3 in the seventh, 2 in the ninth. I don't think there's much more to go over than that. The Royals had one opportunity all night to put runs on the board, and they couldn't come through. So aside from that, it was ugly. Right, it's been ugly. The Royals are now 20 games under 500, the worst run differential in baseball, the worst record in the American League and Major League Baseball for that matter. But instead of talking about the game, recapping a very boring and bland nine innings, I want to turn your attention to an article the New York Post put out the other day. And it's by Joel Sherman, who does a great job covering Major League Baseball. And he's going over who is on the hot seat, whose seat is warm, who is blazing hot, who's not in trouble. Because in the last week or two, both the Phillies and the LA Angels have fired their managers. Joe Girardi was canned in Philly, and Joe Maddon, after losing 11 in a row, falling to second place in the American League West behind Houston, they fired Joe Maddon. So, where does that leave the Kansas City Royals? Because the first candidate on this list, on the warm seats, is Mike Matheny, who is in year 3 of his tenure in Kansas City. And here's a little interesting tidbit. Here are two paragraphs that Sherman had to write up, Joel Sherman, that is, not John Sherman. Joel Sherman had to write up on Mike Matheny. Quote, "You can make an argument that more than the manager should be in play. Dayton Moore was named GM in 2006, and aside from a 3-year span that resulted in a 2015 World Championship, there have been no other above 500 seasons. But that feels more of an off-season issue. Keep in mind that Moore hired Matheny, but Moore's taken on more of a global role this year as president of baseball operations with J.J. Piccolo as GM. There is a relatively new owner in John Sherman. Perhaps expectations were miscast, but there were internal hopes of building toward contention this year. Instead, Kansas City has the major's worst record. Just as bad, especially for Matheny's ability to survive, is that opposing executives and scouts have reported a bad vibe around the team. Maybe that is just losing." That's what caught my eye. That opposing executives and scouts have reported a bad vibe around the team. Here's what we can take from that. Number one, I can't imagine the vibes are very good when you're 17 and 37. You're not going to be all sunshine and rainbows in the clubhouse when you're 20 games under 500. But this is not the first time we've heard that executives and scouts have sort of pointed fingers at the Royals and said they're doing things the wrong way. Things are not good in the Royals organization. We've heard that with their ability to develop pitchers, to develop hitters. We've seen this year alone a couple of guys that were on the 2018, 2019, and 2020 Royals go and thrive somewhere else. Jake Junis headlining that list. The Royals non-tender Jake Junis, the San Francisco Giants picked him up. And about a week ago on their post-game show, one of the questions was, is Jake Junis the ace of the Giants staff? The San Francisco Giants, who had the best record in the National League last year, yeah, they're contemplating, though it's not true. They're contemplating whether Jake Junis is the ace of the staff because of how good he's been. Jorge Lopez is closing out games for the Baltimore Orioles and has been phenomenal, just to name a few. But now we're hearing that maybe the vibe around the team is not even that good, and has Matheny lost the team? And that, in reality, is the only way a move would be made. The only way Matheny would be fired, the only way Cal Eldred would be fired, is if you lose the team. We've gotten to this point now where production, numbers, stats, they don't really matter to the Royals front office because something would have happened by now. The Phillies and the Angels, who are both better-run ball clubs, they're more successful, at least the last couple of years. Obviously, they don't have a World Series title. You look at them and you say, okay, they want to react quickly because they have higher expectations for their team. The Phillies have much higher expectations. They have a better lineup than the Royals. They fired Joe Girardi because they felt like they couldn't get him or he couldn't get them to the postseason. Same thing with Joe Maddon. They tried it out in L.A. It didn't work. They lost 11 in a row. You can't lose 11 in a row with Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, Anthony Rendon. Those are too many guys on your lineup that are star-studded players. The Royals don't have many star-studded players, but they're not 17-37 bad. And so now it's the front office looking at and saying, okay, will Mike Matheny be the manager to get the Royals back to contention, to be a competitive baseball team? If other scouts and executives are saying, I don't think the vibe is very good around that team, I think you have to take into that account a little bit. Same thing with other opposing scouts pointing the finger at maybe the pitching development, saying, man, if they were in our organization, we could really tap into their potential. It just feels like the Royals turned a blind eye to it and say, you know what, you focus on yours, we'll focus on ours. It's kind of like another parent teaching another parent or telling another parent how to raise their children. And the Royals are that parent that constantly is just screwing up. And somebody, one of the friend's parents, says, man, maybe you should do this or you should do this. And the Royals are just stubborn about it. They said, you know what, why don't you focus on your own house? We'll focus on ours. Yet the Royals' house stays in shambles. But here's where the Royals are in that situation. If we are making the metaphor or creating a metaphor that the children are maybe the players and maybe the parents are J.J. Bacola and Dayton Moore, or John Sherman, whatever you want to say with that, then the children at this point are kind of becoming the teenage phase. They don't care. Because it looks like in the last two games, at least, the Royals have kind of mailed it in. I don't want to question the passion, the effort of the team, because I know they're just playing a much better team right now in Toronto. But man, getting shut out in back-to-back games and losing 8-0 and 7-0, it's getting more than ugly at this point. We can keep harping on, yeah, they're losing a lot of games. I can weather losing games in a baseball season because you know it's going to happen. There's 162 games. Losses are going to happen over the course of a handful of months. It's losing when it's not even competitive that I can't really sit by and watch. And the players are dragging right now at this point. It's not necessarily their fault. They're not really playing with the best created lineup. You know, pitching's been a problem. The hitting's been a problem. All around, it's just been bad. And I think when you can look at that, it'd be tough to stay zoned in from time to time. I mean, yeah, there's still 108 games left on the season, so they know they're going to have to keep showing up and playing, and they are playing at the major league level. Many guys would kill to play at that level. I'm not saying that they're ungrateful for it. I'm saying that it's going to be tough over these next 100-plus games to come to the ballpark every single day when none of these games matter. I mean, yeah, you can try to convince me these games matter. I say games matter when you're trying to compete for a postseason spot. They're really not competing for much at this point. And that's tough to motivate a team to say, okay, well, we absolutely need this game. Because if the Royals, they play later on this afternoon, they win the game, they lose the game, it does nothing. It really does nothing other than make you feel good heading into a 4-game series with Baltimore. That's the tough part of this all. And that's what the article kind of points out. There's a bad vibe around the team, apparently, according to a couple of opposing executives and scouts. But could it just be losing? We've all been on losing teams before growing up. It's not fun to go play for the team that loses all the time. You want to play for the team that wins a lot. And if you're a Royals player, I wouldn't blame them one bit going, man, could you please trade me at the deadline? I'm seeing what Jake Junis is doing in San Francisco. I know I can do the same. You know, guys like Scott Barlow, Josh Staumont, Andrew Benintendi, Michael A. Taylor, Whit Merrifield. Now, I'm not going to put words in their mouth and say they want to be traded, but, man, if I were them, I'd say, just get me to July 31st. Put me on a contender where I can be surrounded by a winning culture. Because right now, the Royals don't have a winning culture. And that's maybe not even the most depressing part of it all, is that the Royals are okay with the losing culture. They have been fine with the losing culture for the last couple of years. In fact, aside from 3 years in the mid-2010s, they've kind of just accepted losing. And that's where it'll kind of be gut check time. We've all been calling for Cal Eldred's head all season long. And Mike Matheny, I've tried to give the benefit of the doubt because he really only is in year two. He's had one full season as manager for the Kansas City Royals. So how much of this is really his fault? Well, somebody's got to fall on the sword. Terry Bradshaw was the first one to fall on the sword. We all think that Cal Eldred deserves to fall on the sword next. It might just need to be a clean house situation. And Marco and I have gone back and forth on, okay, what's the limit? You know, how many games do they have to lose to clean house? I don't know at this point, and I've gone back and forth on this a little bit, if it's how many games they lose, it's if the players no longer are motivated to play for that coaching staff. That's what could eventually clean house. Or the coaching staff isn't motivated by the front office, where there's a disconnect between all three. Marco, do you feel like after watching the last couple of games, there is a disconnect between coaches, players, coaches, coaching staff, front office? It seems like there's no communication. I mean, there's no juice, it feels like, on the field. And when you're 20 games under 500, how can there be any juice? The team's just flat out bad. But that's the problem here. Do you feel like you can see that disconnect right now on the field after being shut out in back-to-back games and losing 15 of their last 18?
Well, I can tell you right now, I'm already disconnected because I didn't watch the last two games because I got better things to do in the evening with my time. Also, the first game got delayed two hours with no rain. But
that was, yeah.
I would have stayed up back then. I would have stayed up for a better team, especially with a team like the Blue Jays in town, who are a competing team. But I think that There is signs of a disconnection with the organization. You look at the front office with JJ and Dayton. Who's the general manager? Who's really running things? Dayton told us last year when during Piccolo's press conference introducing him as the new GM that JJ was still going to have to run things through him. And I don't know JJ too well. I don't know him and Dayton's relationship at all, but At some point, I feel like if you're a general manager of a team, do you still want that babysitter? Do you still want to have to get have things approved? Because that told me right there that Moore has trouble. Moore wasn't giving up any general manager roles that he could. Still was wanting that type of power of running a baseball team when it comes to its roster. And I think it's one of and watching the team this year, what I'm starting to see clearer than I did last year was that this team has trouble moving on. It has trouble moving on from players. It has trouble moving on from coaches. And it has trouble moving on from people in the front office. Looking at you, Dayton Moore, you talked about his time here in Kansas City. A lot more losing seasons than winning seasons. 2014 and 2015 is why he may still be around. Then again, ownership before Glass sold the team, maybe him and Moore got along really well. Maybe there was a good relationship there. Maybe Dayton had that relationship, and that kind of helped with his job stability also. That's why I said yesterday, I'm waiting to see. Maybe it is we have to get through the end of this season for Sherman to make a move as an owner that's related to baseball outside the business side, more so the structure of the team and the organization itself, and putting and the people who build who you watch in the stadium, what teams we're going to be watching in this supposed downtown stadium for years to come. Because I know he doesn't want this type of team in there. I know he doesn't want a team with a team that is on the verge of breaking franchise records in the loss total. So, yeah, there is a strong disconnect. And I think, once again, we're just seeing more evidence of Alec Lewis's article of The Athletic a few weeks ago last month, where he's talking about players starting to get a little tense in the locker room. And they're seeing success other places with talent that's been a part of the Royals organization, and talent that is compared to theirs. Really, the only shining bright spot this season so far is Bobby Witt Jr., because he's kind of quietly having top three rookie season right now. So, yeah, it's a lot clearer than it was last year. There was a lot to get excited for last offseason about the team now. And now we're seeing the 2022 Royals, and boy, oh boy, there's a lot more problems than we thought there were going into this. And now, and also, but there is some fault as far as the star players not getting started off quick early, like Whit Merrifield just getting into a slump. Really, only one player getting off to a quick start, and that's Benintendi, a guy who hasn't really dropped since, and what he's been able to do performance wise this season. But yeah, you're seeing it a lot more now than ever, especially with how this ball team is ran.
Have you seen Kitchen Nightmares with Gordon
Ramsay? The show, yeah.
Yeah. Here's how I can make a good comparison to that. And if you haven't seen Kitchen Nightmares, listen up. That's how it works. So they pick a restaurant, right? They pick a not really a bar. It's more Bar Rescue. They pick a restaurant, a fine dining restaurant, and Gordon Ramsay comes in. And almost every single episode, Gordon Ramsay goes in, and the owner, whoever's running the business, maybe it's the co-owner, they feel like nothing's wrong. They feel like their food is great. They're just blaming the customers. They say, oh, well, they just don't like our food because they don't get why we make this food. And then sometimes the waiters or whatever, the people working there, the cooks, they're like, no, this is bad food. And they'll tell Gordon Ramsay that. And that's where Gordon Ramsay tries the food. He says it's terrible. The owners get defensive. That's what the Royals are doing right now. When you look at the owner going in, they say, nothing's wrong, right? We're fine. You need to worry about your own self. We're fine. We don't know why it's not working. And the players are going, we're seeing other guys out there succeed. And we want to be successful too. We're Major League Baseball players. We are playing as our occupation here. We are employed by your team, but it's not working. And not saying they need a Gordon Ramsay type of baseball person to come in and tell them how to run their organization, because you know what? If that even was a thing, the baseball, quote-unquote, Gordon Ramsay would come in, leave in 2 or 3 weeks, and they go back to doing the same old stuff over and over and over again. This is where John Sherman has to evaluate it and say, maybe all these reviews coming in from other executives, from other scouts, they have to hold some kind of weight. I mean, if we are in the public this much for being a team that is this bad, that's telling. That has to be telling. You're going to set franchise records in losses, run differential. It's bad right now. And really, this team shouldn't be this bad on paper. And I'm not rooting for the team to just bottom out at 110 losses. I just feel like for drastic changes, off-season changes, a lot has to happen. A lot has to go wrong.
Nate is a very smart man, but also very...
Hey, Marco. Your mic's on.
Ay, ay, ay. Just reading texts out loud right now.
I thought you were talking to my ear, and I'm like, man, I don't know if this pertains to me, but you are going out over the air.
Appreciate the
save.
So
I caught you. I caught you before you just started dropping F-bombs, I guess. Yeah. No, you're all good. But yeah, that's kind of the gist of where we're at this point, is that a lot has to go wrong. A lot has gone wrong, but it has to continue to go wrong for stuff to happen like this, for drastic changes to happen in the front office. And maybe John Sherman can run things differently, and maybe we're not giving him enough credit, because so far, not a lot has happened, right? He's only been here for 2 to 3 years. How many changes are you realistically going to be making in just year three of taking over this team? But I don't know. Now that the New York Post has put this out, The Athletic has put out a story that the Royals simply are being criticized by other teams on how they're running things, or pointing out bad vibes around the coaching staff. I mean, we can all see it, right? We can see this team just doesn't have enough juice right now, enough juice to win baseball games. And that's where maybe you can sit back and question and go, you know what? Maybe we should trust these scouts more than our own organization. And that's a tough line. And that's where John Sherman has to go. We're going to start having our fan base attract or lure on to opposing executives that we don't even know the names of, pointing out flaws in the Royals organization that we can see on the field. And that's where you have to sort of step up and say, okay, I need to do something about this. You want the baseball team downtown. You want the stadium downtown. You got to have a winner first. And you can't wait 5, 6, 7 years of losing baseball to eventually start building a winner. It starts now. It starts in the offseason. And it starts with step one of just cleaning the house or not being as stubborn when hearing input from outside organizations. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue our movie segment. If they hold up today, you're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Now we got a fun segment lined up. Once again, we've been trying to do this at least 3 or 4 times a week. Sports movies, do they hold up today? Then we went through 2 yesterday. I think we'll have time to get through about 3, I believe, today. And I think the trend I'm going to do today is Adam Sandler movies. We'll start it off with Waterboy, 1998. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 33%, Metacritic a 41%. Adam Sandler plays Bobby Boucher. Firuza Balk, I believe that's how you pronounce it, plays Vicky Valancourt. Kathy Bates plays Helen Mama Boucher. Marco, is Waterboy a movie that just, gosh, what would that be, 24 years now? Yeah, 24 years later can still hold up today and you can enjoy this movie.
Absolutely, yeah. It still airs all the time on TV.
It does.
Comedy Central's got it, TBS, but still quotable. Not my favorite of Adam Sandler's sports movies, but yeah, it's a true underdog story with a great message. Stay hydrated. You got to drink your water.
To me, the voice is irritating. The Bobby Boucher voice is very, very irritating. I know it's one of Adam Sandler's bits. Like, we've heard that Adam Sandler voice countless times, even back to SNL. But I don't know. It's a very humorous football movie. Like I said, I'm not expecting every sports movie to be realistic. And this one is more of just the, not even raunchy comedy. It's just like the dumb comedy, like Dumb and Dumber. Like, it's just the humor in that is like stupidity. And that, to me, grew old after a while. Like, the first couple times I watched Waterboy, I'm like, this is hilarious. Man, I could quote Bobby Boucher all the live long day. But then, like, after round 3, 4, maybe 5 of watching Waterboy, you're like, I just don't find it as funny anymore. The jokes are played out. And that's how I kind of gauge this movie, is can the jokes hold up, not so much the movie. You know it's not really based on being a football movie, right? It's like it's called The Waterboy for a reason. But what's the... Gosh, what's their college again in the movie? Oh, I have it right here. It is which? Oh, I don't even have it in the Wikipedia like headliner. I feel like that would be
South Central Louisiana State University Mud Dogs.
South Central Louisiana State. So that's a play on two. That's a funny joke.
And Bobby Boucher is 31 in this story.
Yeah, he is. That's right. And he starts on as the water boy, and then they find out he can hit like Lawrence Taylor. So he joins the team, and then somehow they go from the laughing stock. I think Henry Winkler's in it too, yeah. Henry Winkler,
he's the coach.
Yes, the Fonz. He is the head coach in that. And they have a bunch of the other, like Adam Sandler casting guys that he always has in every single one of his movies. I'm going to go that it doesn't hold up. I'm going to go with it because the humor to me is played out. It's a little bit old. It's a little bit stale at this point.
It is a TikTok trend right now, the Bobby Boucher voice. Have you seen that?
No.
You're not on TikTok, though, are you?
I'm not on TikTok.
Okay, well, then, yeah.
Is that really trending?
Yeah.
Why is it trending?
They have what's the one of the lines he has in the movie where Bobby Boucher is going through one of his monologues, and TikTok, for some reason, has made a trend out of it. It's not funny, I'll tell you that. You can go ahead and try to look it up and find it. I just... You have the gif that's the tail or tale as old as time. I guess with Rob Schneider saying, we suck again, that's used almost in everybody's sports replies on Twitter.
Oh, when they're out there trying to, when they're all out there.
Again.
The candle vigil.
Yes, yes. I've seen that used way too many times on Royals social media under the comments after posting following a loss. It just, to me, the humor's played out. So I'll leave it at that. You think it holds up, but now we'll have time to switch into movie number two. And this one, I don't know if it'll ever get old for me. Happy Gilmore, 1996, Rotten Tomatoes, 61%, Metacritic, 31%, way too low on Metacritic. Julie Bowen, who's also in Modern Family, she plays Virginia Venite, I think it's how it's, or Bennett, I think it might have been. Happy Gilmore, played by Adam Sandler. Mr. Larson is played by Richard Kiel. They don't get the full cast here. Carl Weathers plays Chubbs. Christopher McDonald plays Shooter McGavin. Jessica Gunn. Well, wow, Jessica Gunn was in that, but she's playing the girl that he signed her breasts in that part. But I don't know why they have her so high. Obviously, Bob Barker's on this as well. They have her way up on the list of the casting, which is weird how Wikipedia does that. An extra they have like as the fourth listed person on the casting names. Don't know why, but... Anyways, Happy Gilmore to me. They put it on Netflix, I believe, not too long ago. I watched it again. It's still hilarious because I use it in my golf game. Every time I make I two or three putt, I'm like, uh-oh, Happy learned how to putt because that's the last remaining thing in my golf game. I can't putt.
You don't use a hockey stick.
No, I should.
Yeah.
I think it might help me a little bit more. But that movie is what every golfer dreams of being, just naturally gifted. Can drive the ball 400 yards. You know, the game's a little bit rough, but can compete in a PGA championship. You know, after having no golfing experience, you just learn from a legend like Chubbs. Then you just go and dominate the competition. I know he doesn't dominate starting off, but he at least places. Now, he's not too bad, and that's without knowing how to do anything on the golf course other than basically slap shot a drive like 350 yards. But to me, it's because it's so funny to watch if you've played golf before and you're not very good because you long to have the skills of Happy Gilmore. Anytime I go to Top Golf 2, I do the Happy Gilmore swing where you just walk up and then just try to hit a bullet. Never works, obviously, because the movie's fictional. But I do have to, one time, Marco, try to use a hockey stick to try and putt. Get more control. Get lower to the ground. I might not shank it off to the side. I mean, I went golfing last weekend. I think every time I was on the green, I three or four putted. And I was playing a par three course. So I double bogeyed and triple bogeyed almost every single hole. I felt good about my golf game because I'm never that good at even to double bogey.
You have no issues getting to the green, but then it's that short.
Not really, at least not over the last weekend. I was actually getting it up near the green. I could chip it on just fine. Once I got to putting, terrible. Just awful.
Where were you golfing at?
Fred Arbasis, I think that's what it's called. It's kind of near Lee Summit, I believe.
Okay.
It's first time I ever played there.
Oh, how'd you like it?
It wasn't too bad. It rained on holes 8 and 9, but I'll be honest, I played with my cousin. It was just us two, and there was nobody behind us, so it felt good to like not be rushed or anything. I don't think I've ever played that well before.
Did you guys card it? Did you walk it?
No, you had to walk it. You can't take a card on par three. So, yeah, we were walking it. But it wasn't too bad. I felt good about my golf game, and I was nervous because it was the first time I'd golfed with him, and I was like, I don't want to embarrass myself here. Like, if you go out there with somebody who's just can't even get the ball off the tee, like, it's not fun. Because then you're like, okay, they're not even in competition. They're not even playing at this point. And they take forever. You know, you have three or four mulligan shots. I feel like, for the most part, I played terribly, but I held my own. I could at least hit the ball in the air, get it close, or we could walk forward. That's a problem I've had before. I haven't always been able to walk forward on a golf course to get to my ball. But I felt pretty confident. I used the hybrid one time. Was pretty good with my 8-iron. Just couldn't putt. But like in the movie, I was like Happy Gilmore early on. Just can't putt. But whenever I do 3-putt, I'm like, uh-oh. Happy learned how to putt. So for me, this movie is just great. It definitely holds the test of time. I'm going to say even in today's world, 26 years later, Happy Gilmore holds up. What say you, Marco?
Yeah, absolutely. If Waterboy holds up, then most certainly Happy Gilmore holds up as well. You don't get the annoying Adam Sandler character voice that you're talking about, that you're referencing in Waterboy like you do, and Billy Madison too, of course. But yeah, it's one of Adam Sandler's. It's one of his best comedies out there. One of the best characters he's had that he's played. The mini putt-putt scene, Carl Weathers teaching him. That's what you need to do. There you go. Go find yourself.
Mini putt-putt.
Go find yourself a wise old man with a fake hand and.
I got bitten off by an alligator.
Yeah, go putt-putt or something. Go play some putt-putt. But absolutely. And then you got then you have Shooter McGavin, one of the best villains, I guess you could say, comedy movie. In it as well. What, trying to force old grandma out of her house.
Oh yeah, that actually makes me sad when Ben Stiller.
I was gonna say you were just praising Ben Stiller the other day, weren't you?
I feel like I was.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Oh, was it Dodgeball? Maybe we were doing Dodgeball.
Possibly. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was Dodgeball.
Praising his acting. And
oh, yeah. Ben Stiller has great range. Also, it's been about a year since I've seen it, but one of my favorite movies of Ben Stiller's, and maybe this is not really an unpopular opinion, Dodgeball is great, but Tropic Thunder is hilarious. I think it's Tug Speedman.
Yeah.
Is his name Tug Speedman? But that cast in it is so absolutely hilarious. Robert Downey Jr., Jack Black. I can't think of who plays, what's his name?
Tom Cruise?
No, not Tom. Well, yeah, Tom Cruise isn't as the agent or the owner of that big corporation. No, I'm thinking of the guy that has...
Jay Bruchel.
Jay Bruchel's in. I couldn't think of his name either, but there's one more. Who do you have the casting list up there?
Matthew McConaughey's in it.
Yeah, Matthew McConaughey's Tug Speedman's agent. It's, who's the other guy? It's
Danny McBride.
Danny McBride's in it, yes, but he's very early on.
Bill Hader.
Bill Hader's in it. No, I'm not thinking. He's in the group. He's in the Tropic Thunder group.
Ben Stiller, Robert Downey Jr., Jack Black.
There's one more. It's the other guy. It's Jay and one other guy. No, I know I'm going to get this.
Brandon T. Jackson?
Brandon T.
Alpha?
Jackson, yes.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that's what you were thinking.
I couldn't think of Alpha because he's got the energy drink and he's a rapper. It's so hilarious because that's how you'd imagine... we're getting off base here. This is Tropic Thunder, not a sports movie. But it's so funny because they're all actors from different genres, which is why they did it, and put them together for one war movie. And I can't help but imagine that's what happens in Hollywood when you just get these off-the-wall actors getting into one movie that bombs. Although Tropic Thunder was very good in the movie. It was a movie inside of a movie. Fantastic one. It's incredibly hilarious. And that's another movie that Ben Stiller's great in. But Ben Stiller was also pretty funny in Happy Gilmore. All right, last one before we go to break. I don't believe we've done this one yet. Varsity Blues. You've seen Varsity Blues?
No, I have not.
Okay, we'll move on.
Is Adam Sandler in Varsity Blues?
No.
Oh.
Varsity Blues is a 1999. It's a high school football movie. You know James Vanderbeek? He was in Dawson's Creek. He's the main character.
Yeah,
he plays Moxon.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I reckon. I know the face.
Paul Walker's in it too. He plays the quarterback that gets hurt. It's kind of the same thing as had a similar storyline of Friday Night Lights where the star player gets hurt. And they have the backup come in. And so Boobie Miles and Friday Night Lights gets hurt, tears his ACL. And this one, Lance Harbor, I think, breaks his leg. But kind of similar in Friday Night Lights, the show, the quarterback gets paralyzed, actually. And I'm spoiling it for you already. But that's in episode one. You'd find that anyway. And then the backup quarterback, Matt Saracen, takes over. So, yeah, it's kind of the same one. We'll move on, though, because I want to get a movie that you have seen. What about, let's go White Man Can't Jump. You've definitely seen White Man Can't Jump.
Oh, yeah, I've seen White Man
Can't Jump. Okay, so I think I already know your answer to this. I think you should know
Hold on, I'm going to go get my gun.
There you go. When I come back, I could quote 75% of that movie. It's a weird number to say, but yeah, I could. 1992, 30 years later, Rotten Tomatoes, 77%, Metacritic, 65%. Woody Harrelson plays Billy Hoyle. Wesley Snipes plays Sidney Dean. I'll say this. I've played a lot of pickup basketball. There is not one person I've idolized more in the movie industry than Woody Harrelson. I think everybody strives to be Woody Harrelson when you go play pickup basketball. Like, I go to Lifetime. I go to Lifetime up by my apartment in Lenexa. And there's one day where there's, like, 40 people on the court. Okay? And, like, they just pick you. You can sign up for sure, but like sometimes like somebody will leave and be like, hey, do you want to come play? And my dream always be this guy, backwards hat, baggy t-shirt, and they're like, do we really want to get this guy? And then I just go and torch everybody. Like that's what Billy Hoyle did, which is why I idolize Billy Hoyle. And in the movie, where he's sitting over on the sideline and he is not talking, and Wesley Snipes comes over and he plays him, and then finally realizes, man, he's really good, and we can hustle a lot of people because he looks like, when he walks onto the court, he's terrible. And then Woody Harrelson, by the way, too, is just a phenomenal basketball player. Like, what have I always said with these movies? Realistic, right? And, like, how realistic does the actor look playing the sport? Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes are good at playing sports. Wesley Snipes is good in Major League. He's also great in White Man Can't Jump. Same thing with Woody Harrelson. He's great in White Man Can't Jump. And Adam Sandler, too. We'll get to this movie, I think, next week because I won't be here Thursday and Friday. But we got to get into The Longest Yard because Adam Sandler also is an actor that can play.
So, funny, going back to Adam Sandler, he also has a new sports movie on Netflix.
He's a New York Knicks scout, correct?
Yes.
No, it's Sixers, 76ers scout. That's gonna
he's
be
an
good.
NBA scout.
Kind of
yes.
like an Uncut Gems type of movie. Well, involving basketball. But I think for White Man Can't Jump, it's always going to hold up for me. And they're actually doing a remake, which I'm super pissed about. We talked about this on ESPN Wichita. It was a All-State Twitter question. And it was talking about the sequel of White Man Can't Jump, and Jack Harlow is going to play Billy Hoyle because Jack Harlow was in the Celebrity NBA All-Star Game and does not look good at basketball. He just launched some half-quarter, basically, and it went in, like one of the four-pointers. And they're like, that's Billy Hoyle. I'm not going to pay any money to go see that because nothing can compare to the original. So I'm going to say it holds up. Marco, what say you?
Yeah, of course. Don't see why they didn't feel the need to make a remake of it. When the first you know something holds up well when they make a remake or when there's plans for a remake. And the majority of the crowd sees that, and they're like, why? That doesn't make, like, no. It doesn't make any sense why that needs to be a thing.
Ugh. It sickens me because they shouldn't touch such a beautiful movie. And don't make it a way where it's like Jack Harlow will be Billy Hoyle's son. Don't do any of that.
He can't, and he also can't be Woody Harrelson, though.
No. And not even close. That movie should not be touched. It's too good, which is why I say it holds up, you say it holds up, and why now... With 10 minutes left in the show, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll preview a little bit of Game 3 of the NBA Finals and finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Game 3 of the NBA Finals will take place tonight at the Garden. Boston, a 3.5-point favorite, over-under at 212.5, tip-off at 8 p.m. on ABC. The Warriors dominated Game 2, blew out Boston and San Francisco, but also fell in Game 1 after coughing up a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter. So it very well could have been 2-0 going to this point, and the Warriors would be looking to maybe sweep Boston. My prediction was Golden State in 5. Marco's was Golden State in 6, if I'm not mistaken. It feels like, though, tonight could have massive implications on how the series plays out. So, for example, if the Warriors go into Boston tonight and win by 10 or more, I feel confident my Warriors in 5 pick is still very much alive. If Boston wins, I can lock it in this is going into 7 games. Even if Boston wins by 10 or more tonight, I don't feel like they'll somehow beat the Warriors in 5. I think Golden State's too good. But Golden State has that ability to blow out teams. And they very well should have blown out Boston in the first 2 games. They were up big at the end of the third quarter in Game 1 and completely torched Boston in Game 2. As for Game 3, now going over to the Garden, Games 3, Games 4 will be at the Garden. They'll return to the Bay Area for Game 5 if there is one. Actually, there will be one. If there's a Game 6, excuse me, it'll be at the Garden. If there's a Game 7, it'll take place on Sunday, June 19th in San Francisco. I just feel like, and I don't want to throw out that term loosely of, well, it's a must-win game. Of course, the must-win game tonight for both teams, right? You want to go up 2-1 in the series. You want to build a little bit of that cushion. If you're Golden State, though, you need to take at least one of the next 2, right? Because this is the road game. It's the formula of beating teams in a series. You got to take at least one on the road, and they have the next 2 in the Garden. You take one, the pressure comes off for Game 4. And if you win in Game 4, if you somehow take both these, I mean, there's no way in hell Boston's overcoming a 3-1 deficit. They're not blowing that lead like Golden State did to Cleveland back in 2016. There's no LeBron James on the Boston Celtics. So when I look at the outlook of this series, tonight is so meaningful on how either of these teams wins, but more importantly, for how Golden State wins. If Golden State ekes by, I still feel confident with like a Boston losing in six games, like Golden State winning this series in six. If Boston wins by any margin, I think it goes to seven. If Golden State just routes Boston tonight, I think it's going to be over in five. I think that Golden State can run away with it. Though the NBA can be wishy-washy with type of performances, like you can blow out one team one night and be blown out the next night, I just feel like with this series, once Golden State gets hot, like beating a team the way they did in Game 2 and that they do it again in Game 3, I think you're starting to really get into the psyche of the Boston Celtics and knowing that they're not going to be able to overcome a team that is led by Steph Curry. Marco, last thing from you, predictions for tonight as we head into, at least for myself and for yourself on the show, a very long weekend.
I'd say we're going to see a lot of fouls tonight.
A little chippiness?
I'm predicting two players are going to get tossed. How do you like that? In the guard.
Draymond, one of them?
Nah, not necessarily, but two players will get tossed tonight. There's gonna be an altercation. It's in the Garden, man.
It has to be. Yeah, you know, with that crowd. Boston's crowd, I mean, we both watched Winning Time, and it really put into emphasis how, like, I guess nasty the Boston crowd can be at the Garden.
Right.
You have the little leprechauns on the floor that can that give you bad luck. I would not be shocked one bit. If it's going to be somebody, I'd say it's Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Draymond Green, or... I think those are probably the three most likely candidates. Those are the guys that have already been in an altercation, right? Maybe Al Horford wouldn't.
No, not Horford, no.
Horford has been chippy this postseason. It's been exciting to watch.
He's been playing angry.
Yes.
That's when he does well.
Who would have thought that Boston's season would have been kept alive because Giannis talked smack to Al Horford, and Al Horford's nodding along like, you just messed up. And everybody laughed at him until Al Horford just went and took them into a Game 7, and then they won in Game 7.
It's why Boston's here.
It's why it's one of those sports. All righty, now we'll do some fact or fiction. Five questions, five takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, Mike Matheny is fired before August.
Man, I mean, if they keep losing at this type of clip, you're going to say no on this.
I'm saying fiction.
Keep losing at this type of clip, they're going to have no choice. If they go into August at like 25 and 60-something, there's no way. But I don't see the Royals being... I can't really say they can't be that bad because they have been that bad. You know what? I'm going to go fiction with you because until the front office shows me something, I can't believe they're going to make any moves like this.
Fact or fiction, the Royals are shut out today versus the Jays.
Last time they were shut out in a 3-game series was in Cleveland in 2017, and that was still a team that had a lot of stars. All 3 games. They were in Cleveland. That was the really good Cleveland team that won, I believe that was their winning streak, their 22-game winning streak.
Right.
Gosh, who even is pitching for Toronto today? I feel like it's... Today, it'll be Kikuchi pitching a tough lefty, a hard-throwing lefty. I'll go fiction. That's tough to be start out 3 games in a row.
Fact to fiction, the Celtics win tonight and hold Curry to under 20 points.
Fiction, wow. I think Golden State wins tonight, and they're certainly not holding Steph under 20 points, so I'm going to go fiction. I think Golden State wins tonight, and Steph has 20 or more.
Fact or fiction, Jordan Poole leads all bench players in scoring tonight.
Man, I love Jordan Poole. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA, and I can't believe he comes off the bench, but he's great at that role, a great sixth man for Golden State. I'm going to go fact. I think he'll lead all bench scorers tonight in scoring.
Cam Newton will start another game in the NFL.
So I don't know if you saw this. Cam Newton said that he put himself in bad situations in both New England and Carolina. No, Cam, it was the only teams that gave you a chance. And if he starts another NFL game, we've already seen that Cam is out of his prime. He's not good anymore. If he starts with somebody, it'll be because there's two other injuries happening on that, you know, rotation on the depth chart. He's still with Carolina, right? So I think if he's still with Carolina, unless he's a free agent, he's going to have a chance because Sam Darnold's really not going to be that guy. I'll go fact. At least one more game he will start probably this year. But after that, I don't think any more for Cam Newton. Well, there's Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back on Monday at 10 AM. You take it easy, Kansas City.